People do bad things to other people, and sometimes they're really bad. 26 years ago, in a village in Rwanda, Tassien Nkudi murdered his neighbor. The 43-year-old Hutu and a few other men from the village attacked their neighbor with machetes, and they cut him to pieces. This was but one horrific slaying during a 100-day genocide that killed an estimated 800,000 ethnic Tutsis and the Hutus who tried to protect them. Nkudi, he was convicted of the killing and he spent 8 years in prison. Now, this may seem far too short an imprisonment, but in a country where sentence after sentence was being passed and few were left without blood on their hands, imprisonment for life would have emptied the country altogether. Now, once Nkudi was released, he was asked to be part of an experiment. The government was trying to organize what it called reconciliation villages. Victims and the perpetrators who had served time for their crimes were invited to live side by side in the same villages. Convicted killers would have to publicly apologize for their crimes, and survivors were invited to forgive them. The hope was that healing could begin to happen. But is this really possible? Forgiveness, that is it possible? Many, in fact, have been quite cynical, if not critical, of this experiment. They feel it's a political stunt by the government seeking aid money. Participants also get financial help with housing, school fees, and other things. Any professed reconciliation is forced and artificial. Forgiveness, and certainly reconciliation, after this kind of horrific evil, it cannot be possible. Can it? 2,000 years ago, in Palestine, a healer, a preacher, and one some believed was the Messiah king appointed by God to save the people from oppression, he was executed. First he was tortured and then executed by physical mutilation on a wooden cross. The goal, of course, was to crush any hopes in him being who his followers claimed he was. But within days of his execution, within days, some women of his group and then some male disciples claimed that he was alive again, the same person, different, yet the same. And not only that, they claimed that his resurrection proved that he was the Messiah king appointed by God, and more. His resurrection meant that he was no less than God in the flesh, because this was the way God would save the people from what most deeply oppressed them, the enemy within. The resurrection of this man from the dead meant that a gateway to the most comprehensive liberation and transformation was opened up through the indestructible power of love. All of that was what they believed the resurrection of this man meant. Okay, but who would really believe that? Who? Resurrection from the dead, that is? You know, who could believe that? How can the resurrection of a man executed in the most horrible of ways, how can that be possible? How can God be present in a crucified peasant, a nobody? How? How can love truly win when it is crushed again and again by hate, violence, suffering, illness, and despair? How? Many experts said it was a matter of time. a massive pandemic that would afflict thousands, if not hundreds of thousands. It was just a matter of time. But people just lived as we've always lived, you know, consuming, spending, traveling, expanding the carbon footprint and the movement of all kinds of goods and services. So here we are, here we are. We have no choice but to endure it, to kind of hold our breath as we try to manage as best we can, following the rules, getting even stricter so we can plank that curve. I mean, we're better here in Canada than many places in the world. I mean, we have resources many do not have. And yet even here. So what do we do when it's all over? Will anything change? Let's be real. Things will probably go back to the way they were until it happens again, or something worse maybe. You know, most people, they want minimal disruption in their lives. We want to be as free as possible to be and do and not have to think about our negative impact on this planet or on each other. We don't have to carry that burden all the time. But is change possible? Real change? Is it possible? Impactful change? Is it possible? Can it happen? Okay. In order to open up space in us for some alternative thinking, feeling, and maybe doing, in order to do this, let's seek out some revelatory guidance from our scripture reading for this Easter Sunday. And in this regard, let me make 2 points. First of all, resurrection is not resuscitation. You can pretend evil, pain, and loss haven't happened. You can't pretend evil, pain, and loss haven't happened. You can't bring back someone when they're actually dead. You can't pretend the world is not a scarier place for us all now. People are gone and they're not coming back. We can never feel safe collectively the same way. We can no longer just be individuals living our own lives in a particular part of the world as if others and the rest of the world don't exist and intersect with our lives in highly influential ways. We can't do that anymore. And once we have witnessed genocidal cruelty and barbarity in real life, we can never pretend the world is not capable of producing such cruelty and barbarity again and again. No. If change is going to be real change, it cannot be resuscitation. It has to be resurrection. Second, resurrection is not restoration. Life can never go back to the way it was before. What's happened has happened and is happening. If we're talking about forgiveness with justice, it has to be a different kind of love than anything we've known before the cruelty and barbarity. There has to be a different quality to this love. If we're talking about new life, it has to be a different kind of new life than one so vulnerable to being tossed about here and there without deeper roots and more enduring capacity. It has to be different. If we're talking about a decent future collectively for our planet, then there has to be a different kind of commitment and responsibility for each other, for life, and for our world as a whole. It has to be different. Restoration can never be enough. It has to be resurrection. Okay, preacher. So what is resurrection? The male disciples ran to the tomb. They saw it was empty. They left. Mary, however, stayed. She lingered, weeping. She was absorbing the grief for what it was, evidence of a terrible loss. You know, the more you love and the more you're invested, the more you grieve. But her investment and her grief, it placed her exactly where she needed to be for resurrection to be experienced firsthand. She saw Jesus. She heard Jesus. It made no sense. It makes no sense. But she responded to what she experienced as very real. She then went on to live her life believing the resurrection was real and living as if it was real. The same happened to the other disciples. You know, they grieved the loss. They absorbed Good Friday. And they were the ones to experience the resurrection through the gift, the miraculous gift of faith. They lived it out, becoming bold witnesses in a way they never were before. Bold witnesses of the indestructible love of God that could still change the world. That's the way they went on to live. You know, love, it gets crushed in a world of hate and violence. It does. It gets crushed. But it rises up again and again in brave, new, and ever emboldened ways. It rises up. It's the same love. It's the same love, and yet it's also different. It has to be different because it absorbs all the grief, the loss, and the evil done, and it carries all that into a deeper and richer kind of love necessary to bless the world now. Resurrection life carries the old life. We're still the same person. It also carries the wounds and the scars. The losses are real and ever with us. The newness in resurrection life is how the wounds, the scars, and the losses become part of a newer, richer humanity that becomes us. It's how we learn and grow and become more compassionate and caring human beings. We grow deeper roots in our capacity to endure, to listen, to absorb the pain of others, and to be a healing presence of love in ways different than anything we were able to offer before. Resurrection life is what the first witnesses encountered in Jesus. And the spirit of this same Jesus became the energy that fueled the movement that became Christianity. So, where is there evidence of this kind of resurrection life 2,000 years later? Is resurrection possible today? After being released from prison for murder, Nkudi was housed in a village nearby the widow of the man he killed. And somehow, they are friends. Their children and grandchildren play and share lunch together. Their cows graze in the same field. I am grateful to her, Nkudi says, of the widow, Laurencia Mukalmera. I'm grateful to her. Ever since I apologized to her after prison life, confessing my crimes and asking her for forgiveness, she has accepted me. I even leave my children with her when I'm away. Now, one thing both Laurencia and Nkudi share is faith. Faith. Faith in God turned the act of confession for Nkudi from a necessity and a duty into one of heart-wrenching remorse. Faith in God did that. And faith in God turned the act of forgiveness for Laurencia into an act of personal liberation for her and a way of honoring her husband by refusing to let hate live in her heart. That's what faith did for Laurencia. And this is resurrection. Resurrection. And what about all of us? You know, here and now in this season of COVID-19, what about us here and now. Is resurrection possible, really possible, is it? What would genuine new life look like? Maybe it would be about rethinking an economy built on consumption that destroys our planet, maybe. Maybe it's reinvesting in global institutions and governments that focus on the welfare of all citizens, especially the most vulnerable, rather than shareholders with the money and power, maybe. Maybe it's about us rethinking our collective lifestyle and global travel in ways that are sustainable for our planet, maybe. Maybe it's about us stepping out a little more from our individuality and isolation into meaningful relationships and communities of care and friendship. Maybe more of us will invest in the sacred core within us through ritual practices like worship and meditation within communities, rather than isolating ourselves in our own self-absorbed worlds, maybe. Maybe we will all deepen in our commitment to justice and love and how these values mean something only in relationship to each other, rather than just some concepts we throw around here and there, maybe. What is happening to us is a wake-up call, but more. It is an invitation to resurrection, to have faith and hope in what's possible. We cannot afford to be cynics. There is enough evidence that resurrection is possible. Consider Ninkudi and Laurentia. What about you and me and our world, beginning with the world at our doorstep? Today, the season of Easter begins. Even as we are hidden in isolation, may the seeds of resurrection begin to grow in our hearts until they are fully formed as fruit to be shared. Jesus Christ is risen. He is risen indeed. Hallelujah.